Wednesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And a couple of quick notes to start out, and first, thanks to everybody that reached out regarding yesterday's medical proceduring, and I'm a little a little roughed up, a little bit like a pincushion, but it was worthwhile, and cardiologist, it didn't have to do too much, and certainly didn't have to do anything, in terms of overhaul at all, and was very happy with what he found overall. So that was good. The stent, some things to, I don't know what the hell they do. You fall asleep, and then I never saw the guy afterward. So he talked to Tina, and she's not. She hasn't been very forthcoming. She just said he said it went very well. So I don't know. I honestly I didn't feel terrible going into all this, but I don't know. I'm at the disposal of Capital Cardiology here in Albany. So that was, I didn't have to stay. Obviously, you're hearing me live this morning. And so good on this front. Not so good, obviously, and horrific. And I'm challenged when it comes at this point. I didn't say anything, 10 days ago. The horrificness in Buffalo and California, and this thing yesterday, Texas. What are you supposed to? How many expressions of horror and obviously the. Inadequacy of the thoughts and prayers. It's just, it's an international embarrassment, this country, period. Incredible. So, I, as somebody who, grew up in an era where, the worst thing that could happen is that you came home with a fat lip because somebody punched you, or a black eye, and having not had children grow up in my household, but now having grandchildren, I think a more intimate understanding and immediacy. I've got certainly tons of friends that have children, so I can understand to some degree. Up until now, having two grandchildren, and we're going to see them. In fact, they're coming for the holiday weekend. I don't know. I can't imagine. I literally cannot even conceive of what it would be like to experience this as a parent, as a grandparent, an aunt, uncle, anything along those lines. Sibling, obviously. I the horror of it is beyond, it's beyond comprehension. And the people that you're supposed to count on and look to eradicate, or at least try to eradicate this scourge, they're, I won't even say powerless, because they're not powerless. They have every absolute opportunity and power to at least try to, you know, try to stem some of the carnage. And doesn't take a lot of, you know, a lot of deep thought to understand, you know, the motivation of the people that, you know, block at every turn attempts to, you know, make it more difficult, at least throw more hurdles into the path of people looking to acquire, you know, assault weaponry. Just ridiculous. So I couldn't get going today without trying to make sense, or there's no assuaging anybody's, you know, devastation as a parent and you know, an intimate of, you know, the children and the teachers. You know, in addition to, you know, to the expression regarding the grandchildren, I can also fold in, you know, my wife, who's a school teacher. So, I mean, the it's a lot easier to understand, but and have a, you know, a personal reaction and expression to it that way. But yet, you know, what do you? there's only a certain group of people actually that might have the influence to do something, and that would be some voters in certain places. I don't know how else to tell you to approach this issue. So, we will actually talk to Chris Hyde later. And it just occurs to me, knowing that Chris is going to visit animal lobbyists and provide an update on the work that actually, when it comes to legislation that we're all, you know, trying to get behind. Chris is going to join us in a little bit, probably looks like between 10:30 and 11:30 at some point. There's committee work on the SAFE Act that starts tomorrow, and Chris will update everybody on what's happened since we spoke to him the other day, all right, and what else we need to do. You know, we sent out the link to the letter writing, Return to Freedom, on their website that lets you communicate with your legislator. You could probably add another separate piece of communication. And maybe Chris, I know Chris listens, and I don't want to surprise him, but I'll send him a note during a break. He can maybe explain how, you know, here we are, you know, trying to use influence and lobbyist efforts to affect something that we, you know, we collectively believe in, which is, you know, to end slaughter in our, you know, in our environs. Canada and Mexico, the path to horse slaughter, which, you know, I think we all want to believe is a noble pursuit. It's hard to believe that anybody finds it a noble pursuit to try to affect and influence legislation or block legislation that could prevent, you know, potentially prevent what transpired yesterday. That doesn't feel so noble. But I guess they do fall under the same banner of, you know, lobbying effort. So, Chris Hyde later. Seth Merrill later. How about Sid Fernando later? Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And I sent out the link to Sid's piece in TDN today, his Taking Stock column, which appropriately and predictably focuses on gun runners. Outlandish. When you read Sid's piece, you will, it won't take long before you understand the breadth of what gun runner is fashioning here, because Sid invoked names like Blushing Groom and Sadler's Wells, Monjou, and Galileo. For, you know, it's May, today's May 25th, and so the, you know, the year's, you know, coming up on half over, and gun runner with his first crop of produce, it has five grade one winners. I mean, it's, and there's quite a bit of racing yet to come, right? I mean, there, you got, should actually look up how many, you know, obviously at the end of the year against older, there's tons of opportunities, short and long and turf and dirt. But through the middle part of the year, there's only really a handful of grade ones, let's say, between now and, I guess, say September, or when, you know, mid-September. I mean, Pennsylvania Derby and Cotillion being the, you know, the last age-exclusive opportunities. But, you know, there's other, you know, there's Woody Stevens, right, and the Alan Jerkins, Travers and Haskell, obviously, grade ones. Who else? What else is out there? On the three-year-old front, Acorn, Alabama. You know, there's a handful of more opportunities, but it's pretty astounding. So let Sid riff on that, and, you know, talk about the female families that seem to be, you know, very nice cross. And there's actually a sidebar story that, and in fact, I want to reach out to John Fradkin. And I don't know if you saw it the other day. I know I liked it when John took an ad out in TDN and, you know, talked about Rombauer, and, you know, it certainly on the candy ride side, you know, doesn't need a lot of introduction, but John was kind of showcasing the female family of Rombauer. And of course, Rombauer had the bad luck of missing this, you know, potential season to stand his first year at stud. And so, you know, John is undoubtedly fielding offers, and I'm sure has had ongoing conversations. I'll ask Sid about this and what his thoughts are, because he brought Rombauer up in the Taking Stock column. Chris McGrath also wrote about, I haven't read that yet. That's I read Sid's piece because he sent it to me last night. But I saw where Chris McGrath also in TDN was talking about early voting and what, you know, what has been wrought here early. And you did have to appreciate Steve Asmussen as frustrated as he was, understandably, with, you know, being denied, you know, this, they're not running Epicenter in the Belmont, and they'll have, you know, they'll also have those opportunities for Epicenter as the, you know, summer unfolds. But he did make the proverbial lemonade when he said, you know, the silver lining here of getting beat like this is that Gunrunner, it gilds his lily. And then Steve said, Gunrunner's the greatest sire of all time. It's early yet, But we'll see. It might not be so hyperbolic, years from now. So Sid later. We're going to talk to Dick actually in a little bit, and I'll probably I've got to get the sale results. Which, of course, if you didn't see what went on yesterday, I thought I tuned in at an opportune moment on Monday when I heard the day one, the session topper. Then yesterday, I obviously was laid up and in the hospital, and so I was not able until later on when I started to look through TDN alerts and everything that was going on. Our man Gary Young for Amer's Hedan gets into a bidding war. This was old school. This was Godolphin Coolmore. Amer's Hedan had his heart set on the Bernardini Colt that really breezed well. And Gary, I'm not sure if Gary's traveling back today or if he went. I'll send him a text. Maybe we'll get a couple of thoughts from Gary. They had identified this Bernardini Colt that was bred by the Bromans. Went 9-4, and I thought Gary's comments were very interesting about being surprised at how fast and early this Bernardini looks to be, because Gary thinks he physically he's got all the tools to be the kind of down the road. Well, let's call it what it is. It has all the tools to be what Amer Zidane is looking for, and that is Derby horse. And so that's the thought process on this one. And actually, this one comes with a name. I this is one of those. I'll have to ask Gary and Amer Zidane what their thoughts are. One school of thought is that you don't change the name. Other school say you just paid $3.5 million, you can do whatever you want. and chances are, I think they'll probably. But Burning Remarks actually is not a terrible name. But we'll see what Gary and what Amer Zidane have to say. West Point, Terry Finley, and I'm sure a hatful of potential partners were involved in trying to acquire this colt. $3,550,000. It breaks, shatters, the headline actually calls it, the record at Mid-Atlantic sale, the basic Tipton Timonium, the May sale. And obviously it helped buoy the totals. The median was off just a little bit, and this was not a great middle market sale, to be honest. You had a little bit of all or nothing. In fact, I think I used that yesterday with Trombetta. It's a bit of a feast or famine kind of a scenario. But I mean, overall, a lot of six figure sellers, and yesterday, beyond the $3.5 million sale topper and record setter, bred mentioned by the Bromans, and of course Becky Thomas sequel consigned, and then there was another Bolt Oro, $500,000 for the Spendthrift bred colt that had been a $40,000 Keeneland yearling. And this is Raul Reyes, who had a really good, sale. Congratulations to him. Holly and David Wilson bought the Bolt Oro colt. $500,000. The top fillies yesterday. Top fillies. Where are the fillies? Where'd the fillies go? Those are all boys. Did I not Well, here, I could do it on this page instead. Top Philly. Well, this is the 2-day. So I guess that Malibu Moon for $500,000 as well. And, oh, this was the one. Okay, I didn't realize $500,000. I didn't realize I thought it was maybe, is that right? Jonathan Kinchin and Black Type Thoroughbreds, they paid $500,000 for the Malibu Moon Filly, 487 out of Lorelei True, that Kieran Dunn consigned. And I thought I saw that as that, which was also let me see, I could have sworn that was I guess so. I is that right? 150? Huh. All right. That, I guess that's it. Yeah. So that must be it. I guess I didn't, I thought I had the Philly page printed, but I guess I didn't. So, because I knew I'd seen that, but I didn't realize it was 500. Maybe, I think, I want to say that this was a, did I see 150,000 as a yearling? So another nice pinhook score. How about, American Pharoah Filly that Cherie DeVoe bought from the McCaffins, $500,000. This is out of Jordan's Henny, 443. So that was another of the yesterday's nice filly numbers. But the Girvin from Monday was still the top filly purchase, the one that Donato Lanni bought for Michael Lund Peterson. And so Sid and I will also kind of breeze through and take a look at, you know, some of the stallion results. 2-year-old in training sale season will have one more stop back at OBS for June. And I got the catalog came. It's like a small phone book. It has to be, I'm going to say it's 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 inches tall or high. Instead of two books, they put it all in one. So it's going to be, you're going to be doing a lot of dog earing and page marking. So one more chance if you're looking to fill out your orders. All right. Dick Powell's going to join us here. Case, why don't you reach for Dick? Let's get him in here and we'll talk a little. Let's pull up the valley so we can play the 9:45. It is opening day at Delaware Park, and always excited. And we say it every year, and of course we don't have the opportunity anymore to visit with the one and only Rich Glaser, and that'll continue to be every time Delaware is on your screen or when the season starts. Take a moment and think about Rich Glaser, who was just so wonderful. And we'd look forward. We would only talk to Rich probably 3 times a summer. Opening day, Delaware Oaks, and Delaware Handicap. You know, those which of course come back to back. On back-to-back weekends, the Oaks goes first, and then the Cap. But I mean, just as affable and as cheery and could possibly, you know, you could possibly want. So we miss Rich terribly. But if you've never been, and having just, you know, driven to and from Baltimore, I can tell you and remind you that if you've never been to Delaware Park, make an effort. You will, even if you don't typically, you know, play their signal or so forth, try to go. If, for starters, you. As I've said a million times, it's the most beautiful paddock in all of racing. I guess I would. I don't necessarily have a an ideal comparison to make. But it certainly is nothing else in North America. There's no other. Saratoga is more open. I think Dick is joining us. Saratoga is more open. Over the years, they cleared out the trees. At Delaware, the trees are very much intact. You know, there's like an open spot that is opposite the racing office, the little mansion looking racing office and jockey quarters. But then the tall trees, they then go the rest of the length of the paddock. I mean, it's like the Black Four. It's like Baden-Baden. There you go. There's a comparison. Baden-Baden. it's just fabulous. It's a little tiny track that, when I say little tiny, I mean, it's a full size oval. But it's well worth a visit, and it's so easy. I mean, it's literally, even if you go for two or three races on your way up or down 95, it is literally seconds off of 95. If you're going to the Maryland or Delaware or Jersey Shore this summer, you got anything traipsing up and down 95, try to make Del Park. What was Richie's tagline? The little place where the big names race. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning. Yes, it is a very nice paddock, and never been to Baden-Baden. Longchamp has a beautiful paddock with trees and just a kind of an amphitheater type surrounding where like 10 rows of standing areas that you can see. So that's a beauty. Obviously, Saratoga is a beauty. It just adds such an aesthetic value.
Well, and they've had some ups and downs, obviously. And when it comes to the race product, Tom Creel, the racing secretary, and looks, you know, the first card. In fact, my friend Tom Herman, who's more of a steeplechase guy, Tom just sent me a note. He just said he's going there for opening day and 15% pick five, three turf races involved in it, and there you go. So you got a reason to look over the cards at Delaware Park, and we'll get a Del Park visit. I'll reach out to JJ to see if he's got a couple of minutes for us this morning. That would be a lot of fun, actually, to see if JJ will come on and say hi and kick off the season. Dick, for our purposes, let's get a few household items in before we dive into that seventh race at Happy Valley. Some Preakness thoughts.
One thing, every year we go through the same exercise. We're trying to pick the winner of a classic race, and the one thing everyone gets wrong are the odds. I mean, Friday afternoon and Saturday morning, early voting is dead on the board. He's fourth choice, 7-1. It's like, what am I looking at? It's just mind-boggling. So the thinking was that the center would be favored. Early voting might be the wild horse and be a pretty close second choice. And he wound up being third choice, kind of a distant third choice. 13-40 to win on him is just outrageous. Chad, I tell you, it doesn't always lend itself to the classic season, but when Chad points for a race and has time, man, watch out. Because he had him razor sharp and had to have him razor sharp because Epicenter ran very, very well, and Jose gave him a great ride, took advantage of his speed. Track was quick. They were running 109.7 throughout the day. But then Ethereal Road came from off the pace to win the Sir Barton, so liking Secret Oath, I thought, well, maybe I got a shot against the seeming bias with her, but she got in trouble early, made a middle move, flattened out. It was all early voting.
It, the expand for a second, Dick, on the wagering. I brought it up with Andy yesterday, and we only had a couple of minutes at the end of his segment to really flesh it out. I mean, is it as simple as the reaction to the 80-1 Rich strike? Is it that one dimensional?
Well, if you told me that early voting was going to be the price he was, almost 6-1, I would say, well, Epicenter has to be 4-5. And yet, Epicenter was not that as strong as you would think. And then underneath, there's like 7-8 horses all within a couple of points of each other, many of which, Fenwick and Thompson, I just didn't get it. I'm like, why are these horses 8-1? They should be 20-1. Now, you did have a favorite, and you had a clear-cut favorite, but then there was like this chasm between Epicenter and the rest of the field, and how early voting didn't take more money, at least in the win pool. That was shocking. And you know, you're going into a race, I know everyone will, you know, yeah, obviously, yeah, if you like them, you got a better price. You also like to see some parimutuel activity on your horse. You don't want your horse dead on the board. And for the most part, he was throughout the day. So I just think we all got it wrong. And I think people fell in love with horses that really should not have, you know, shouldn't have been falling in love with them. At least horses got overbet in that race. It's like, I don't know. It was puzzling to me. The race wasn't. It went early voting. I picked second. He won. You know, just, he was terrific. But the betting pattern of not just him but some of the other horses made no sense to me.
Well, it certainly to anybody that either had already committed to early voting, or those that were actually price shopping and were waiting to take a wait and see. I mean, it was a bonanza. And I heard from several people. My friend Steve Carlin, one of our partners, Steve said, this is crazy. And Andy Serling, too. I mean, Andy said, you know, he was like, I mean, he was in on early voting from the first jump, but he couldn't believe it either. And I think, you know, I think the owner did okay, who's been known to do some betting. I think Seth Klarman, I think he took advantage of the bulbous odds.
Well, and it's also a fascinating exercise, Steve. If you were offered 4-1 fixed odds, would you have taken it? Not obviously at post time, but early in the day.
That's the cut line, right? That's the cut line,
yeah.
Right? I mean, anything above 4-1 is, you know, is, I don't want to just say value. I mean, frankly, even, you know, even 7-2, depending on how you utilize it. I mean, but as a win bet, for him to be that price, you don't even worry about anything else, to be honest. You can completely plunge on the win end.
Yes.
There it is.
It was just amazing that, you know, with the connections and the narrative through cloud computing, they've done this before, similar pattern, and not the greatest field we've seen assembled with three-year-olds. It's like, how's he this price? Just didn't add up. And obviously the polls are pretty big on Saturday. There was lots of betting going on.
Well, we got 10 minutes. Let's take advantage, Dick, because some mornings, if somebody comes on early before you, it we end up having not enough time to really flesh out maybe the pick three for the 7th, 8th, and 9th at Happy Valley. Let's get some opinions in here, and I'll pull up the form to win and take a look at this. This is the Mirs Bay handicap, and looks like we've got a field of 11 after the scratch of one of the longer shots, Miraculous Honor. So take us through the sequence.
Okay, it's a class 4, 1,200 meters. The outside posts are at an extreme disadvantage, so keep that in mind. I like 6, 7, 8 here. 6 is the favorite. Excellent peers, Frankie Lohr, who's already had a couple winners on the card tonight, Joe Moreira. They break from the rail. Joe, I'm sure, will get him up in the first flight as they go into that first elbow. And if he does, he should set a perfect stalk and trip. And then underneath him, I like the 7, Jingji Stamina, Matthew Chadwick for Chris So. Big win 3 back. Last couple weren't that good, but those were from post 10. Now he gets a much better post 2. And then number 8 is a bit of a price. Loriz, Ricky Yu, Derek Lung. Good speed, last few starts. Could be the one to catch. Looked like it was raining there a little while ago. I don't think they've changed the turf condition, but certainly not the firm ground this one might want. But still, speed is speed. So we'll go 6, 7, 8 in the first leg. Second leg is the split division, so it's the second section of this race. And I like 2, 4, and 5, Smiling City. Another Matthew Chadwick runner trained by Doug White. Big win 2 back. Then came back and ran pretty well from post 9, had the lead in the stretch, got run down, gets better post position today. And 4 is Above All, Tony Millard, Ron Meyer. Big win last time out, and the handicapper must have been really impressed because he raised him from a 43 rating all the way up to a 52 rating. So he stays in the class, but he moves up 9 pounds in the handicap rating, but that was an impressive win that he had. And then number 5, Ever Force, Karis Teton rides for Ming Choi. Had the lead in the deep stretch, weakened. He's had a kind of a history of weakening in his races, but at Happy Valley, he stands a better chance than hanging on. Those last 3 were at shot 10. So 2, 4, 5 in the second leg. The third leg, and remember with the pick 3, you do get a consolation. So you do not have to win to make money. You can run second and still make money in the pick 3 here. So I'm going to go 2 deep. The 1, Harmony Blessed, very good horse, very fast, should handle 1,000 meters. Now, 1,000 meters goes around a turn, but it goes down the straightaway. Doesn't have that little elbow like the 6 furlong race has. So Harmony and Blessed breaking from the 3 with Blake Shanda, who's going back to Australia at the end of this meet. He rides for his man, David Hayes, and we'll throw in number 5, Party Warrior, Zach Purton. Good win, 3 back at Happy Valley, has a decent Happy Valley record over the years, and Zach and Francis Loy have already combined to win 20 wins at this season. So 6, 7, 8, 2, 4, 5, 1, 5.
Very good. All right. So we've got, let's see, looking at about 5 minutes to post. So we'll watch for the red light. Dick, why don't we do a quick recap too of the weekend?
Well, we ran our last Group 1 stake. It was the Champions and Trader Cup, going a mile and a half. Russian Emperor went off the kind of lukewarm 3-1 favorite. He was way back early. They took blinkers off. They got him settled perfectly. Blake Shen riding this one for Doug White. Just got him galloping along. They went through 6 and 1:16, and then the pressure got turned up, and then Russian Emperor last at the top of the stretch, just rolled by everyone. One going away by a length and 3/4. Final time, 226.67. His last 6 furlongs was 110 and change, so he was really rolling. This is a gelded son of Galileo out of a Group 1 stakes-winning Australian Atlantic Jewel. But he's gelded, and he's going to be in Hong Kong for quite a while, and he's going to win a lot of races, as he is really good. And Doug White seems to have figured out, just let him settle, relax. No matter what the distance, he's going to make that one run. And when he's on, that one run is pretty well unstoppable. So Russian Emperor wins the last Group 1 of the 2021-22 season. Kai Ying Star, second at 17-1. Senior Toba, my pick. He was kind of stuck in traffic. Didn't have the clearest trip. Russian Emperor gave up placing to get clear run. I saved ground, but then didn't get clear run. So, bad on me. I could only get third with Senior Toba, who'll be a nice horse next year. So, Russian Emperor finishes up the season. They did have a really good Group 3 in race number 9, and that was won by Cordycef 6, who's this improving horse who started the year out at rated 60. He's now up to 107. He just worked his way up through the classes, and all of Sha 10, he just keeps getting better and better. He goes into next year. He's only a three-year-old, so he goes into next year already rated 107. And last year, this time of year, there was a Griffin race in May 2nd, and he ran second, and the horse who beat him was California Spangle. So out of that race came a major stakes winner, and this was only going 5 furlongs, and Cordycef 6. So he was a very handy winner of the Group 3. There's a real good Group 3 this coming Sunday morning, Saturday night. The Lions Rock, and that'll also attract really good sprinters. But I think next year Cordycef 6 will join them. I don't know if there's any plans of stretching him out. He's still 3. He still has the Hong Kong Classic races for 4-year-olds in front of him next year. But he's just one of these developing horses that just seems to be getting better and better. I did a study that's going to get published any day, and I went through, you know, the three surfaces, Sha Tin turf, Sha Tin all-weather, Hong Kong turf. And normally there's a big discrepancy between Hong Kong turf and Sha Tin turf. Hong Kong turf, Happy Valley turf, tighter turns, shorter course, shorter stretch run. So favorites do not fare as well at Happy Valley. And yet the numbers show that's not true this year. A couple of years ago, Happy Valley Turf, 24% winning favorites. This year, Happy Valley Turf, 37% winning favorites. I mean, that is so crazy. That's just from out of the blue. So, which, you know, normally we'd see 8 or 9 races at Happy Valley. You might get 2 favorites winning. Now you're getting 3. So that was a big change. And the all-weather, there's been 74 races run on the all-weather track this year, only 7 favorites. So the percentage of winning favorites on the all-weather is 9.46%, which is also kind of crazy. So when you add it all up, when you put them all back in the stew, you got your usual 31% favorites overall, about 18 average win price, 11.9 average field size. So all that kind of stays within the margins, and yet the ingredients in the stew, very different this year than we've seen in past years. So that's kind of a crazy trend, just for whatever reason, I don't know, but it just seems to be carrying through throughout this season, which has 12 or 13 more cards to go.
Wow, I didn't even think about how that's true. Once we get to Belmont, usually that's my awareness moment that the season's winding down. But it's actually much closer. Looking here at some odds, and I pulled up Form to Win, which is kind of interesting. And there's one price that is showing up. When adjusted for distance, Star of Young Long, who is 18-1, but then after that, it's fairly straightforward with Lauris. That's that 8 horse, 4-1 that you've got included. You've got the 5-1 Zhangji Stamina, Matthew Chadwick, who we've really this season really kind of taken a shine to. 5-1 on the 7, and then Excellent Peers now down to 3-2. Taken, of course, was even money, actually, morning line, but 7-5 now, Excellent Peers. So the 7-8, the 6-7-8 for Dick, and I'm taking an interest in a significant price here in that Star of Young Long. And there's actually a couple of other sprinters in here that over the season we've watched. How about 11-year-old Harrier Jet, who just he just is always around. And who else is interesting in here? No, that's it. We got those are the principles. 6, 7, and 8 for Dick to start out this pick 3. If you're still punching tickets, 6, 7, 8 with 2, 4, 5 with 1, 5 as we get ready. Bring up the audio and Theta Hedge, a 45-1 shot is. Do they have him blindfolded? Yeah, they do. He's not happy. Yeah, Harry Bentley decided. Harry Bentley said, "I'll let you guys handle him from here."
Yeah, Harry had a winner either the last race or the race before, and this horse is just not happy. He has to know if the blindfold's helping him at this point. He's a 5-year-old. He's had some experience.
Wow. Wow. All right. Now he's maybe calmed down. And, you know, so of course, the challenge is for everybody else that, yeah, that's already in and standing. Look at him. He will not load. What's their policy? Actually, Dick, do they, will they leave him behind? Is that, I haven't seen that happen in Hong Kong. We see it, of course, the UK.
They're so good at loading. And just as I say that, he goes in the gate. So
yeah, he goes right in.
We don't have to answer that question.
Just about set here for the 7th from the Valley, where it's happy.
Racing. Excellent Peers slow from the inside. Lores, as always, was first away. Exuberant coming through the centre, and Excellent Peers has recovered to be third. Fourth is Harrier Jet and White Perfect Peach around Theta Hedge and the rail Star of Yuen Long. Three wide with Cover Fireball from Handsome Veggie and Zhengji Stamina. And three to Dream Catcher. Exuberant's been able to weave through and find the lead and held out Lores. Excellent Peers third. Harrier Jet fourth, and the speed for a 1,200 metre race isn't over. Great, and then came Theta Hedge and Perfect Peach. Star of Yuen Long the fence from Handsome Veggie, Zhengji Stamina, and then Fireball, and last is Dream Catcher. The leader is Exuberant by a half a length, Lores. Harrier Jet three wide pushed along from Excellent Peers, who's had a nice trip, and then came Theta Hedge and wider as Perfect Peach. The leader is Exuberant. There's a heap of room for Excellent Peers. Lores is next from Harrier Jet. Exuberant, Excellent Peers are on the fence. He's taken over now from Lores and Harrier Jet, but Excellent Peers a little tardy at the start. Everything went right after that, and he's been too nippy up the rail. Excellent Peers beat Exuberant, Harrier Jet, and Lores in that order. Then came next in Theta Hedge, Star of Yuen Long, Handsome Veggie, Perfect.
Well, Exuberant Peers, nice ride. Marrero didn't panic, and you know, kind of brought him into the race pretty quickly, and wins going away. Harrier Jet, a good third at a huge price.
Yeah, the when Laura's the early leader drifted at the top of the stretch, Joe just had the run of the track up the inside, so he just took over, and then he has to brace for the horses. The danger for riders in these situations is the horses who are coming over the top are so far away from you, in the sense that, you know, you're in the one hole, they're like out in the 6 or 7 hole. So it's not just that you can't see them, but your horse can't see them and have that competitive instinct. So you really got to ride them to the wire. Don't take any chances, because even that race got real close the last jump. But he was...
They were coming.
He was
on the
legitimate
outside.
Favorite. Yeah,
the 11, and Lariz kept trying to make up the lost ground. But 6-1, 11-8. And so you've got 7-5 over 9-2. And Harrier Jet, 22-1. And Lariz, 7-2. So first leg in the books for Dick. And then the second division of this handicap will come in 25 minutes. So right at 10:15. If you're sticking with the late action, the last third of the card at Happy Valley. Dick, all right, let's look ahead.
Well, the one noticeable thing tonight, Steve, is there are some people are in and around the paddock. So I know they've been in a pretty severe lockdown throughout the country of China. But tonight I'm seeing a little more people around. Obviously, not like the old days. I don't know if we'll ever get to the old days. But it's just nice to see some fans being able to watch the races in person and things like that. So hopefully that'll be a nice trend that can continue to July when this season's meet ends. Joe is still leading rider. He just picked up another one here. He seems to be pulling away. I think he's 8 ahead of Zach now. So all things being equal, he's going to carry a big advantage through the last 12 or 13 meetings of the season. The trainers go back and forth, Frankie Lohr and John Size. They've been just knocking heads. Doug White has had a tremendous season. Now, he won with Russian Emperor. This is 13-time leading rider who took out his trainer's license couple of years ago, doing extremely well. Now with a Group 1 horse in the stable, that'll help him get better quality. And he seems to have this affinity with South African Lyle Hewitson. They've been winning a lot of races together lately, and that's been a great story. And Lyle's been winning for a lot of trainers lately. I mentioned before Blake Shen going back to Australia when the meet is over. And he talked about how difficult it has been. It's not an easy thing to go and ride in Hong Kong. It's a really difficult thing to go and ride in Hong Kong during a quarantine when you might be separated from family. You just can't take a jet out and come back, you know, 2 days later and do things that might have been allowed a couple of years ago. So Blake has made the decision to go to finish the meet. And he's been riding really, really well, which is great to see. And then go back to Australia, where he's from, and resume his riding career. Blake's only about 35, 36 years old, so he still has a good portion of his prime years ahead of him. But he will be leaving. But Doug White will have this Galileo Gelding to run in all the big races over there, especially anything going a distance of ground. So that'll be fun. And then we got the young emerging sprinters that just look like they're going to join the ranks of the top ones and keep that division as solid as possible.
Now, what do we have Saturday?
We got the Group 3 sprint, which attracted the there might be 7 or 8 in there. They do the final draw tomorrow morning, but it's a nice race, and then some really good handicaps, couple all-weather races to watch out for, and now, you know, watch the all-weather races. All the favorites will win both, but how 7 out of 74 favorites winning is just, that's just shocking. So that's why when I do these deep dives, I don't know what I'm going to find. I don't have my mind made up and say, oh, let's see how this is doing, thinking it's going to be one way. I just do it, and the numbers were just kind of shocking. So that's something to keep in mind as the season progresses. I'd have to go back and look at tonight. I don't know how many favorites have won tonight. Obviously, this was a favorite, the 6 horse in this race. So another one onto the board. So that's been kind of a change, but we get a Group 3. There's a couple other group races to finish out the season, and you get to start seeing some younger horses get out on the track, maybe a Griffin race or two as we head into June and July. And then we'll take 6 weeks off and be back in September.
Wow.
Also a lot of rain, Steve. We haven't really gotten that hot, drying track, good to firm, blazing fast times. We haven't had that in a while. There's been rain. There's been yielding tracks. I do the, you know, that wrap-up sheet every week, and I have a color code
right.
Where red is slow, green is fast. It's been all red. We haven't had many days with the green on the board, faster than par.
Well, look to finish strong, and hopefully we get a chance to close out this pick three, too. The 2, the 4, and the 5. Let me see if the odds have... They have finished, and so here's the numbers in the 7th, Dick, before we go, and let's come down. Excellent Piers paid 490, 270. Exuberant 340. Harrier Jet 910 for the placement, and 2660 Exacta. The Omni, kind of a modest, obviously, modest Omni. But a nice try. How about that? Harrier Jet really, really put the spurs. 262 for the $2 try. 26.20 for the 20-cent variety. And the three horses that Dick's using, 7-2 next on Smiling City. And 4-1 on Above All. 3-1 on Ever Force. So let's get through leg two.
That would be nice, and then I'll look at the last leg and see if I need the hedge or do something. Or, I don't know. It's always nice to be alive in the last leg.
Dick Powell, I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week. We'll start to also arc toward Belmont weekend, and what should be a fabulous 3 days, really, because there's stakes Thursday, Friday leading into Saturday. So looking forward to getting down to New York, too.
Yeah. Well, you're the traveling man, Steve. You're all over the place.
Well, wait till this summer. Tina and I, the reality is setting in about what's going to be a pretty kooky. We've got first the little vacation we always take. Actually, we're going to take 2 weeks. And Casey, you get 2 weeks too. the last week of June and the first week of July, almost 2 full weeks. We're going to show up at Indiana right before the Indiana Derby. That first full weekend in July, and we've got this crazy summer trip that's going to start with the Haskell. We'll do a couple of days at Monmouth leading into Haskell. After Haskell, we'll go to Colonial, and we'll do the Colonial Cup Monday, Tuesday after Haskell. And I mentioned this while we were, well, Tina and I were on the Chesapeake this weekend, and we're going to go up the eastern shore. We're going to go through Norfolk. And instead of coming home 95, I said, Tina, let's maybe come up the coast toward Ocean City. And I said, you know what we could do? We could go to Chincoteague and Assateague and see the wild horses.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the ponies. So we were driving home from Baltimore on Sunday, I start to poke around. Let me see, you know, how do you view them, and you know, what's the whole process? The Wednesday after the 2 days we're going to spend at Colonial, that Wednesday is the pony swim, when they swim from Assateague to Chincoteague, and it's the. I mean, you couldn't make this up. The timing. So we're gonna get a chance to see the whole thing where the herd goes through the water and swims. They say it's unbelievable.
Mm. Fantastic, dude.
Right? How do you say no to this?
That'd be great. Timing works out perfect.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So we're looking forward to that. Suddenly a summer, wacky summer trip, and of course with that trip, Andy will abuse me for missing Saratoga for 6-7 days. That comes with any trip away. I love it. Sid, Sid's next with us, and Dick, have a terrific week. We will catch up next week.
Okay, Steve, thanks. Bye.
Dick Powell, everybody. Let's take the break right here, and we'll come back. We've got quite a bit going on. We've got, obviously, Sid next. Sirewatch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Jay Privman is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get Jay's Preakness recap. I don't want the week to go too far afield before Jay gets his thoughts in. And then something, I got to tell you, it is really going to be, for me, a delight. On opening day at Delaware, to welcome the paddock analyst and host, and the individual, along with John Parada, completely responsible for the existence of this show. J.J. Gracie will join us at 10:50 to kick off the Delaware season. And I'm tickled that Joe can join us. Then later, I mentioned Chris Hyde for an update on the SAFE Act work, and Seth Merrill later as well. Lots to do. 2 hours ahead at the races, back after this.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills, are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians...